Hello, friends. I am Cindy Thompson, and this is a Resilience Project. This is a space where stories are shared and possibilities are discovered. I invite you to partner with me in cultivating resilience among humans, one conversation at a time. Sometimes it isn't until we are in the trenches and navigating some of life's greatest challenges that we discover our strengths. While at other times, it is in reflecting on these past experiences that we realize just what we're capable of. In this episode, Jim Pierce is sitting down with us to reflect on pivotal events in his life, on surviving a workplace accident at 17 years of age, and how these experiences as a young man have prepared him for his current fight with leukemia in his 70s. In my conversation with Jim, you will hear how a sudden and very traumatic accident left Jim with no option other than to reevaluate his initial career choice. Jim eventually shifted to find work in the printing business, leading to their current business on Vancouver Island called Stick Right Label. Jim and his wife Allison, along with other family members, work closely together in this family-run business. Now, not every couple can work this closely together at their work. But once you meet Jim, discover his strong values, his thoughtfulness of others, and sense of humor, you will find a quiet strength that has undoubtedly been refined over the years. Perhaps these traits have become Jim's secret weapon in his current fight against leukemia. Jim Pierce could be your father, brother, uncle, or friend. Speaking from a place of insight, compassion, and humble wisdom, I am fairly confident you will enjoy meeting Jim as much as I did. So, Jim, thank you so much for being on a Resilience Project podcast with me. I appreciate your being my guest today.
Thank you for having me.
It's a pleasure. And what a great afternoon to have this conversation, to learn more about you and about your story in life. In anticipation of talking with you today, I was thinking a person doesn't really get to be 70 without some real life events that have happened, some adversities that have somehow shaped us.
All right.
I wonder if you would share with our listeners some key highlights in your life that we'll maybe cover today. You were quite young when your first major adversity happened in your life. Would you tell us about that?
Sure. When I was 17, I started my first job, getting set for my career to take off, and it lasted for 3 days. And I had an industrial accident where I fell off a scaffold ladder and I was landed on a pipe that crushed my coccyx and ended my career just what I was doing.
Yeah.
Recovery for that was just under 2 years in a hospital. And I could not go back to that same job, so I started up a new career. And that's what I'm doing today.
Yeah. So at 17, you were starting your career. And the career, what was the training you did, Jim?
It was heating and air conditioning.
And so just a few days into the job, and we often hear about industrial accidents, but we don't often get to hear how that has impacted one person's life like yours. So as a young man, excited to get going on your career, and so it just meant going to work one day and having this accident where you fell. So you went into the hospital at 17, and how long were you in hospital?
And I came out about 2 years. So I went in at 17 and I came out at 19 in a couple months.
Yeah.
And it was a slow process, but in those days, that's the only way that you could heal from the injury that I had. And again, that being in there for that length of time, that you certainly learned that whatever happened to you, there's always somebody that's worse off. And I was quite fortunate with my caregivers, my nurses, my doctors. And it just seemed that everything was going the way it's supposed to go, I guess, in the hospital. And along with that injury, my parents were getting ready to go and see my older brother because it was on the same day that I had my injury that my mom was out getting her hair done. And My dad was cleaning the house. And I know that sounds funny. And they were going to see my older brother, Mike, who was diagnosed with leukemia. Mm-hmm. And he was 21. And at that time, there was no cure. So he was given approximately 3 to 6 months. So they were preparing for that on the day that I had my accident, which just compounded everything into one.
Yeah, I can only imagine.
Yeah.
They must have felt so torn, because here there was like already a major crisis in the family, knowing that your brother was really sick. And you were living in Toronto at the time, right, with your family?
Yes.
Yeah. And your brother was in Winnipeg.
Yeah, he was in the armed forces and based in Winnipeg.
Yeah. So they were getting ready to go see him. And now their other son is in hospital with a major accident. It must have felt like the world was crashing around them.
Yeah, for them, I think it was. And they had to make a decision what to do.
Yeah, what a tough decision.
But I had family there with me, so they couldn't communicate with me at all. So the other option was to go to Winnipeg and see my brother, because he was conscious and functioning okay. So they got a good chance to say goodbye.
Mm-hmm.
It worked out right. It worked out, you know, for them.
Well, and it's important. Sometimes we do have to make those hard choices. So I could appreciate you were probably heavily medicated at the time and they needed to go ahead with their plans, knowing that you were safe in hospital.
Right.
So in that 2 years, your nurses that you were getting to know in hospital were sometimes just starting their nursing program when you were first going into hospital. And then they were graduating when you were leaving hospital.
Right. I was there at the beginning and I was there at the end. So it was quite an experience, because they're only kids. Yeah, we're all kids at the time. So, but it was just amazing to be there that long and to see them graduate. So it was excellent.
Yeah. Did they kind of become somewhat of your extended family after being there for so long?
They did. They were basically never alone. So I always had somebody come to say hello or see how I'm doing, or just pop in and say, hey, you know, keep smiling. So, and that was basically the whole medical staff.
Mm-hmm. Well, and when I think about 17-year-olds, at that stage, you know, there's so much you're looking forward to. There's so much that you're excited about in adulthood that you're getting ready to get started on life after high school. And when I think about those 2 years, I wonder what you learned about yourself, Jim, that you think other 17-year-olds wouldn't have had that opportunity to learn about themselves.
I learned if you want something bad enough, you can get it. If you stay positive, you heal faster.
Ah.
You get better quicker. And if you appreciate your surroundings and the people that you're with, it makes everything work out as smooth as possible. So for me, it was, I'm just a kid and I'm being helped by kids.
Yeah, interesting.
Yeah. And it's like in that form that it's kids helping kids. So I learned that to help somebody is not that difficult.
Mm.
To support them, it's not that difficult.
You're raising a really interesting point. I'm wondering, Jim, if you just figured this out on your own, or was there anybody that was speaking into your life at that time that gave you those words of encouragement or that perspective for such a young man to try to look at the bright side, to think about others worse off than you?
Being in the hospital, you can see that what's wrong with you is not as bad as what's wrong with next person beside you. So I'm a firm believer, no matter how bad you think you have it, somebody's worse. And you, when you actually see it, you believe it. Once you believe it, then you can continue on with your own fight.
Mm-hmm. Well, and I love that perspective. I wonder if maybe that early accident in your life really had an impact on the rest of your life. I wonder how that informed and shaped you.
Yeah, I would say 100% yes. because you're not invincible.
Ah.
It makes you more aware of your surroundings, of what you're doing. And somebody tells you, be careful, listen, because they know what they're talking about.
Sure.
So for that, yeah, I didn't have anybody tell me. It's just that when you're living it, that's when reality sets in. If you realize what's going on, then you can work in those parameters. And if you have the proper care and support, makes it a lots easier.
Yeah, you mentioned that, and it sounds like you had a beautiful community of friends and family around you, encouraging and surrounding you with their love to help you in your recovery as a young man, but also how about the rest of your life? How has that played a role as an adult?
I don't know, you know, if I'm fully grown up yet. Men never grow up.
I love that.
But for the rest of my life as an adult, not, it just gives me a different perspective. You know, when somebody says they're not feeling well, accept it. If they're not feeling well, okay. It's okay not to feel good. I don't take pity on people that say they're sick, or if they are sick, I try to support them the best I can.
Mm-hmm.
Because of the support that I got over the years. So it's just made me, I think, an all-around, more understanding individual when it comes to accident and sickness.
Yeah, so that's a really interesting point, because when we have something like that happen when we're young, we learn it early. Sometimes we have to learn it in little ways over our lifetime. But when you have something big like that happen at such a formative time of your young adult life, it sounds like that really shaped your perspective on patience for others, a tolerance for others, and maybe puts a lot of things into perspective. Is that what I hear?
Yeah, absolutely. And that's all it is. It's your perspective and how you handle things, right?
Yeah.
You just need a little kick to realize that that's where you got to go. So.
And so when you had to change careers, was it hard to shift, or was there no doubt in your mind that you didn't want to go back to the original plan?
No, I was quite content to go back to my original career, except by doctor's orders, I could not.
I see.
Then it meant, well, I can't do that anymore, so I have to do something else. And I had an opportunity to work in a little print shop. And I liked it. I liked doing it. And from that, I pursued printing. And it all worked out so far. Knock on wood.
Knock on wood. Well, it's kind of cool to hear how your career took another detour, if you will. And yet it's ended up being something you really love.
Yeah, it's all in the attitude. You're not going to love it overnight. But if there's something there that piques your interest, then keep at it. Because it just might be what you're looking for.
That's a good point. I hear some resilience in that as well, Jim, as you needed to pivot and do something really different. Some people might have got stuck there and really hung on to their original plan A. Mm-hmm. But you really seem to have navigated that pretty well in just trying something new, trying something different. And yet being patient with that process and not expecting to be good at it right away, but to maybe grow into it.
Yeah, my biggest thing after my accident was, I can't play hockey and I can't do this and I can't do that. Can't do all these things. I'm thinking, I'm just a kid. And you cannot tell kids what they can and can't do.
True.
So I was absolutely 100% determined that I will play hockey and I will play football and I will do everything that I did before. And it worked well.
And you did?
Yeah, I did play hockey. I did play football. And the only thing I didn't do is my whole goal was to be in the Navy.
Oh.
That was my big thing. Except I couldn't pass the physical after my accident.
I see.
That was the only downfall, if you would put it like that.
I can hear in that would have been a bigger dream that you had, similar to your brother's career, to go into something that's very noble in that way. What was that like to not be able to pursue that?
because that's what I really wanted to do, was be in the Navy. But I had to be 18. I never made it to 18. So, but that was really a kick that you can't do that.
That was one of the bigger disappointments for you then.
Yeah, it was quite disappointed. And you walk around, you sulk and everything else. But at the end of the day, it wasn't your fault.
Right.
So it wasn't my fault. It was by pure accident.
That's why they call it an accident.
Yeah. So, and one accident leads to something good. And on the other half of the good is the bad. I believe that you take the good and the bad. You go a lot further.
Yeah. So over your life, you had a long career in printing and still do, as you own a business here on Vancouver Island. Tell me about your most recent adversity and being diagnosed with leukemia as well, knowing that your brother had leukemia. And what has that been like for you, Jim?
When I was first diagnosed, it was pretty shocking, pretty dramatic, because it's not normally run. It does not run in our family. They say everybody has leukemia when they're born or has cancer when they're born, but something has to trigger it.
I see.
So with my brother, he got a cold and that triggered, but he got, and I don't know what the exact name of it, but it's the same as a baby would get.
Okay.
So it wasn't like a mature cancer. It was.
Because he was young.
Yeah, he was 21.
Yeah.
When he passed away. And he had it for 6 months from the time he got it to the time he passed away. It was pretty rapid.
Mm-hmm.
For me, it was, my first question was, well, what could I do to stop it? Why did this happen to me? And my doctor told me that cancer is something that is bad luck. Nothing more, nothing less. It's bad luck. You can't change your diet. You can't change your life. It's just bad luck. So if you get it, it's bad luck. If you let it beat you, it's bad luck. So when I was diagnosed with it, it was quite shocked. And not only for me, but for my wife and the rest of my family.
Absolutely.
And to get it at such an elderly age. I mean, I was 69 when I was diagnosed. You know, once you hit 65, you get ready to retire and that. And it's like, wow, now I got to deal with this. And that's what we've done. We've dealt with it. We've, you know, made the best of it. But in the original beginning, it was quite a kick, a knock.
Yeah, a blow, right?
Just a shock. It was like,
yeah,
why now, right?
Fair question. And I think that would probably be quite natural for a lot of people at any stage of life to ask that question.
Yeah.
And I was thinking about how in your 70s, it's not unusual to reflect back on your life, the choices you've made, how we've lived our lives. I meet a lot of people who might say, you know, I wish I'd done more of this or less of that. And I love your part of the story where you talked about the two groups back in the 60s. Can you share that perspective? Because I think that's kind of a fun part of your story of how you saw yourself there as well.
Yeah, back in the 60s, 70s, it's like you had flower children, hippies, pot smokers. And then on the other hand, you had what they call a greaser. A greaser was somebody that combed their hair straight back and didn't do a lot of the things that the flower children do. And so my choice was to be a greaser. And all my friends' choice was to be a hippie or a flower person. And I think that my choice was, for me, it was the better of the choices.
Okay.
Because it helped me get through everything that I was going through, right?
Mm-hmm.
And now it's, when I look back and I look at it and say, yeah, well, I did make the right choice for myself. And all my buddies made the right choice for them.
That's a good take on it. Yeah.
Yeah.
What I hear in that is that you looked at a lot of the things that you've done right in your life and that you feel good about, that you can reflect on and go, yeah, I've made some good choices in my life, as opposed to looking for the things you would have wanted to change. So with your recent diagnosis, you've had quite a challenge with this leukemia and some time in the hospital, a transplant, right, that you've had as well?
Yeah, I had a stem cell transplant.
Yes.
I made the cutoff by 3 days. At 70, you were not eligible to have a transplant. So I was quite fortunate there. The other scenario was that I had almost a perfect match, and my younger sister was my match.
Oh.
And the only fallback to that was, at least I thought there was going to be, would be I was going to like start getting boobs and, you know, start walk with this swish. But I didn't. And that's another battle that I've had, not to let that happen.
Okay. You're having to fight that every day?
That's right. Yeah. Oh.
I could appreciate that would have been a worry for you, Jim. You didn't need anything extra to worry about, right?
Right. But that was the only concern. But everything else was right spot on. So.
Yeah. So using that same perspective of somebody has it worse. And so when I thought about our initial conversation of having you as a guest, you also shared with me, Jim, about being in the hospital, looking around and seeing that young mom you spoke of around, what are the things that, you know, I could do to help them? What are the ways in which, you know, whether it's through research or being part of a study that you could then still help others? Would you like to share a little bit about that and what you learned while in hospital for that too?
The young girl we're talking about, she just had a newborn baby, and to watch her every day get up and go through her routine, and you can tell that she's doing it for the baby. And the baby was always with her, and her husband and or boyfriend, or he was always by her side. But you could just tell that for her, she's accepted the fact that she's got cancer, but she hasn't accepted the fact that she's not going to give up her baby. To watch them, it's unbelievable, the dedication she had to the baby. So, yeah, and being that young, and it's like you just sit there with your mouth open thinking, what I've got as compared to what she has, I have nothing, really. I'm just sick, right?
Yeah, well, and it puts a perspective on it that most of us do not see because we're not in the hospital. We're not on that ward where others are struggling with cancer as well. And you're looking around and really with that same lens, trying to appreciate that at this stage of life, this is what I'm going through, but there is somebody else with a very young child who is struggling with her own journey.
Yeah, she's just starting her life, you know, and starting her family. It's like, wow. And this is her start. Your heart goes out to them. It's impossible not to.
Absolutely. Well, and I just appreciate that lens that you seem to look at life through, Jim, that you continually try to look around you to say, what are others going through? You don't want that sympathy and that poor me. You really want to celebrate life every day. That's what I hear from you.
Yeah, because you don't know if you're going to be here tomorrow. So enjoy today. Enjoy the people that surround you, that, you know, that support you, that as much as they give you as a cancer victim or whatever you want to call it, the more you can take out of them and their energies, the easier it is for you with my wife and the rest of my family. And my strength comes from them, all the nurses, the doctors, everybody, because they're giving off in their language, their body language, you know, what they say and how they say it, that you're getting so much support in that form that it's impossible not to have a good outlook, not to be positive.
Yeah, it seems that you have such an appreciation for all of the medical staff that have been involved in your care and have a great deal of respect for what they do every day.
I do. Like I say, that you can't thank them enough. The medical staff, from my own personal view, is the best in the world. Anybody that knocks our medical system, I just don't understand it. To me, that saving a young person's life far outweighs having your knees done or having non-essential to take away from people like that young lady I was talking about with the baby. I mean, to me, she's a hell of a lot more important than I am. Because my life is now, I'm on the downside where I can only wish that she gets through it, and then she's on the upside for the next 60 years of her life. So,
well, and that seems to be something that's standing out for me is when you have a life event like you did at 17, I can't help wondering when you face potential death at such a young age, like it could have killed you, mm-hmm. right?
Yeah, absolutely.
It really hits home, and it can be an eye opener at an age of life where you wouldn't wish it on anybody, but it can have a pivotal moment of changing your perspective over your life when you kind of face something like that. And now going through what you're going through now, I can hear how that might have informed you and how you want to respond to this leukemia as well.
Yeah, to me, this is just part and parcel to it, right? I'm not ready to give up or to say, I can't win or it's going to be me. You just have to stay positive. So I get up in the morning, if both my eyes open, that's a good thing.
Start with that.
Yeah. And that's, if I'm still smiling, that's good. And I still have all the support around me, that's even better. So I'm just not ready to quit. I've got too much. And I think that I can offer other people some encouragement just by attitude alone. Be positive, because the opposite of positive is negative. And if you live a negative life, it's not good for you.
Well, and that, for that reason, I really wanted to have you as my guest, because I can hear how you try to laugh every day. You try to enjoy every day that you've got. Is there anything you would want to say to the listeners out there that might be going through a challenge right now? It may not be leukemia in particular. It may not be cancer. It may be some other challenge in life. Is there any wisdom that you would want to share with them that we haven't covered?
Yeah, I think that, and again, I'm very big on positive attitude, positive outlook, and just think that there's somebody else out there that's worse off than you are. You should be thankful for what you have, not for where you're going or what you're doing, but for what you have right now in the moment. That's basically all the listeners get out of it, is that be positive, be supportive. If you're not the person that's sick or has problems, then be supportive of the person that is. And God knows that I've had more support in my life than I probably deserve. So I'm quite fortunate.
That is a blessing for sure. And I hear that as a theme when I talk to some of the other guests that I've had, is that sense of community, that sense of support from friends and family has been a big part of their journey as well. But also the attitude, the perspective, and to have more helpful thinking and to be able to focus on what we're grateful for today. That seems to be a theme as well.
That's absolutely. If you can have one laugh a day, then you're doing the right thing. Right?
Yeah, nice.
You just got to have a laugh. Laugh at yourself if you have to. Laugh with others. But just laugh. Just enjoy life, because God only knows when it's not going to be there for you. So,
well, thank you for that, because I think even if we're going through our day, we can lose that perspective. Even if we don't have an illness right now that reminds us of that, just by our day-to-day responsibilities, we can kind of get that heaviness and get bogged down by what we are focused on. And yet, just remembering that sometimes that shift in that lens just slightly can make a difference in finding really good around us, even in some of the darkest moments.
Yeah, I think the darkest moments, you know, for individuals are the ones that they make themselves. It's like closing your eyes and it's dark.
Ah.
But when you open your eyes, it should be bright. Once you open your eyes, your attitude should be the same as your eyes, wide open and bright.
I like that, Jim. That's a great quote. Can we make that a bumper sticker?
You can.
I love it. That's a good quote from Jim Pierce. Well, I appreciate your time today, Jim, and it's nice to see your smiling face. And thank you for being willing to share your story and be vulnerable with us. You know, there's some really bright parts of your story, but there's also been some hard parts. And so I really am grateful for your time and sharing that with us today.
And I thank you for having me, and I thank you for letting me tell my story. And hopefully it'll help some other people that maybe need a pickup or a boost.
Wonderful. Well, and it's been a pleasure chatting with you.
It's been all my pleasure. You have a great weekend.
Thank you, Jim.
Thank you.
I so appreciate Jim taking the time to speak with us in this episode. Although it is valuable for each one of us to find good in each day, Jim is reminding us to be present and appreciate what we do have. Reflecting on his workplace accident as a young man who was just embarking on a new trade, I'm not sure any of us could come out of that experience without a keen appreciation for some of the simpler things in life. We don't go to work expecting to have an accident on any given day. Unfortunately, a sudden mishap can quickly change the course of our lives. Each of these experiences provide an opportunity to learn something about ourselves while developing the strength to navigate hard things. At 17, Jim would not have had any previous reference for how to handle a workplace accident, 2 years in the hospital, or what it might be like to also lose your brother at the same time. There is no way around this type of life lesson. What we do get to do, though, however, is to decide what we learn from it. Jim has highlighted the value of family and friends, which can be like having a team of people who are cheering you on. You can hear how valuable this is for Jim, reminding him how important it is to have those around him. Looking back on his learnings, Jim seems to draw on those resilience muscles that have become quite refined with life experience. It's because of these experiences that he is able to look around, be in the hospital, see those who are having different kinds of challenges, and find a more helpful reframe on what he is going through personally. I can't help wondering how all of our experiences contribute to our values, successes, and the risks we're willing to take over the course of our lives. If you are listening in and there's something about this episode that is resonating with you, I have a few questions to prompt further reflection. First of all, what has your life experiences taught you about what is most important? Secondly, what gives you the greatest meaning and joy in your life? And thirdly, how do your core values and principles guide you in your relationships? I encourage you to take some time this week to write these out and explore what insights you might gain in finding your answers. Perhaps you, like Jim, are remembering that you can do hard things and will weather the storm one day at a time or one moment at a time. Thank you for listening to this episode of A Resilience Project. We would not be doing this podcast without you. If you or someone you know has an inspirational story or is helping to build resilience in their community, please email me at cindy@aresilienceproject.com. In fact, email me either way. I would love to hear from you. My hope is to feature an episode periodically on your letters of resilience. I'm very interested in hearing your story of how you have tackled hard things and what worked for you. With your permission, I hope to share some of these stories along the way with our listeners. Also, check out my website, aresilienceproject.com, to learn more about our amazing guests. Your presence here is important because together we are cultivating a village of resilient individuals. You are creating a space for their stories to be shared and a sacred space for learning to occur. I also have a favor. I would love for you to go to your preferred podcast platform, rate and review the podcast so that we will know how we're doing. I also would like to express my gratitude to the amazing team of volunteers that have jumped on board to support this project. You will find each of those beautiful people on my website on the team page. As you go about this week, I invite you to think about one way that you can continue to grow your resilient muscle. What is one thing you can start with today? See you next week.